good Sunday morning, everybody. It's Richard Muscio with It's Your Business right here on AM 1170 KCBQ, The Answer. We have lots of answers. Greatest business show here in San Diego. This is also a special day, June 3rd, but I'm not going to tell you why yet. I'll tell everybody that maybe, let's say, when we come back after the 30-minute break before I do sponsors, why it's such a special day. Jason Kruger, don't let me forget to do that. That's our guest, by the way.
Definitely won't.
Okay, cool. But yeah, special day, but not yet. I'm going to keep everybody in suspense for 30 minutes, and then I will announce why it's such a special day. But hey, it's your business. Everybody, welcome to June. As a lot of you know, we have some really, really great sponsors on this show, and we've got one of them sitting here with me. That would be Jason Kruger, and Jason, like myself, is a CPA, but he's really different than me because he does different things than I do. In fact, he's different than most CPAs I know. Because Jason, you don't really do the traditional things that CPAs do, right? Which are?
Tax and audit.
Tax and audit. You guys don't do that.
We don't.
And good for you, because those have become commodities. Wouldn't you agree? Price-based commodities?
Yeah, I think so. My background obviously is in audit. And so I spent 10 years doing that. And,
so quick background on you, born, raised, how you got to be a CPA and how you got to be the owner of a great CFO service company, Signature Analytics. Fire away.
Not quite raised, not quite born in San Diego, but raised in San Diego since I was 2 years old. Born in the state of Iowa. It's a big Iowa Hawkeye fan, if anybody is interested in that, which probably is not. grew up here in San Diego, went to college in the mid-90s. At University of Arizona, came back and started my business career here and have been here ever since. It's kind of a hard city to leave, so
that's true.
Keep coming back.
So you wound up out of college at a big four accounting firm?
Started with Moss Adams here in San Diego.
Okay, so
for a couple years.
Yeah, large firm.
And then
locally.
Went to Deloitte, which is a big four firm, I guess, here in San Diego.
Yeah, we called them, when I started, it was the big eight, so we called them the final four.
Right. Yeah, they keep consolidating. down to four. And I was there for about 7 or 8 years, so about 10 years in public accounting, focused on financial statement audit. Decided at that point that I was ready for a change. So I'd made senior manager at Deloitte. The next steps, obviously, would be to discuss if I wanted to go the partner route.
Yeah, they call it getting on the partner track.
Right. My interests were elsewhere. It's a great profession, but I had different interests than that. And really through the clients that we service at Deloitte could see a real opportunity in the small mid-market clients as far as how they use accounting to grow or don't use accounting and finance to grow their business and saw a real need. So I decided to leave Deloitte and start this company, Signature Analytics. And what we do is we support the mid-market companies to understand, bring clarity to their financial information so that they can grow their business.
And you did that in what year?
2008.
So the joke is your timing was impeccable?
Right. Yeah, so about 2 weeks after I left Deloitte, Lehman Brothers collapsed and we were off and running.
Yeah, right, with the economy in a downward spiral.
Right. So it took a few years to figure out how our model was going to work. But basically what we do is we provide fractional accounting services at various levels to support our clients. So our approach is to build a team consistency around how our clients account for their ongoing activities and in their financial reporting, providing the different levels of services that we can provide to ensure that they're getting the best service at a cost point that makes sense for them.
Yeah, I know a lot of businesses, they say, well, I can't afford a CFO. And they're right. They can't afford one full time, yet they still need the service, right?
That's right.
But it's hard to go out and independently find, for example, somebody, say a CPA who wants to be a part-time CFO with two or three or four different gigs going on at the same time.
Right.
And in most cases, wouldn't you agree to the extent that CPAs might be, or traditionally positioned CPAs might be qualified to help here because most CPAs are still stuck with all kinds of, shall we say, compliance work and deadlines, tax season that seems to go on forever now, whereas CPAs might have the skills to do this because they're so deadline-oriented, so compliance and tax season-driven. They simply have no time, right?
Right. Yeah. It's not really part of their business model, or it hasn't been yet. And what we found is in order to be successful, you have to focus 100% solely on this type of work. If a CPA firm decided to carve out a portion of their business to do that, they might be successful. But to leverage that with competing interests around busy tax period, audit period, it can be challenging to provide this level of service. And we spent 10 years trying to and working to perfect this service so that we are really maximizing the value that we can bring to our clients at a cost point that makes sense for them.
Yeah, because accessibility is the key thing. If you're going to be working with your firm or a CPA or any financial advisor with regard to your medium-sized business, you need to be able to get a hold of the people that you're working with. And obviously, if you're tax season-driven, deadline-driven, you can't say to somebody, well, you can't contact me in February, March, or April. I'm too busy.
Right. Yeah, we feel we're part of our client's accounting team and finance department. We drive the success of their accounting and financial environment. So we're hands-on. We're there on site. We're working across the table from them. We can do things remote to create efficiencies. But we want to be part of their team consistently, week over week, month over month, to ensure the success of their business.
So 10 years ago, you wandered out of Deloitte by yourself, and we're basically a one-man company, at least for a day or two. How many team members now?
We have about 80 individuals.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huge growth.
About 80 employees, yeah. So the first 0 to 4 years was went from 0 to 1 employee.
Okay.
Took a few years to figure out the model and establish how we were going to be successful. Was using some contractors at the time, reestablished our value props and how we position ourselves in the marketplace and how we provide services. And the last, I'd say, 4.5, 5 years, we've gone from 1 to about 75, 80 people.
That's pretty
across three markets.
Yeah, pretty fast growth. What are the three markets besides San Diego?
San Diego, Irvine, and Los Angeles.
Okay, so basically Southern California.
Southern California.
Yeah, great markets. So I've seen your company's name in the news recently. I know San Diego Business Journal named you as one of the fastest growing companies.
Yeah, we're excited about that. This is the third year in a row. Obviously, the fastest growing company list goes by percentage growth. So the larger you get,
it's hard to stay on there for a long time.
Right. The more challenging it gets. So the first year we were on there, we were actually number three.
Okay.
As far as fastest growing. Last year, I believe we were number 12. And this year, to be determined, we know we're on the list of 100. But not holding my hopes up that we're in the top 10. But we have experienced significant growth. And we expect another 40 to 50% growth this year, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. I want to talk to you, too, about some things going on with income taxes and stuff later in the show. But even better than the San Diego Business Journal article, I saw you with a really cool award from Inc. magazine, Top Places to Work, right?
That's right.
Or Best Places to Work.
And that is a representative directly from our employees and people that work with, and our team that works with us.
Yeah, because they consider many and choose very few.
Right. Yeah. It's something we're very proud of, very prestigious. And that it comes directly from communications from our people. The process involves a survey written and answering questions and. That, again, comes directly from our people. And that's what makes us most proud about this award is that our people feel that this is a great place to work, a great place to grow your career, and to provide excellent service and quality to our clients and make a difference, really.
But, I mean, you guys are proof that you don't have to have an old-fashioned, shall we say, office structure, brick and mortar, everybody come to the same office at the same time and use the same computers, right?
Right. We have a flexible work environment. So we do have office space. We have a very, we upgraded, I guess, about 18 months ago to nice office space. But we have an open, what we call a hoteling platform. So that's set up so that anybody can come in. They can plug their computer in. There's a screen. There's Wi-Fi. Phones are rerouted through cell phones, phone numbers. So we really can work productively from any location, which is critical because we're on our client site. We may be in between client locations. We may be at a coffee shop. We may be at the office. So it's critical to be able to do that. We do recommend that our team, just for cultural reasons. If they are not at a client, it's recommended to work from the office. Mm-hmm. It's easier to collaborate. It's easier to work with others and continue to provide service to our clients that way. But reality is we can work anywhere as long as we're appropriately communicating with our clients.
Yeah, I think the open architecture is neat. You're also seeing this now with office space morphing into, for example, shared office space. Mm-hmm. Places like Common Grounds up in Carlsbad. There's another business, I think, over in Encinitas doing the same thing.
Right. Yeah, we have. There's really no walls. It's open. It's wide open. People can plug in, sit wherever they want, and it's flexible in that way.
And I think that's one reason why you're considered one of the best places to work, because it attracts people who are very creative and energetic as opposed to who just want to drag in every day doing a 9-to-5 job.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we want to position ourselves as a way, a place that people can continue to grow and their career, because we are hiring the top-notch individuals. Mm-hmm. We're hiring, we can't hire just a standard accountant that's going to sit in a corner and not talk to anybody. We have to be, I can say that joke because I am an accountant and so are you. But we have to hire individuals that can communicate, can work well with each other, can multitask, and are very, very smart and proactive with the people. But we also have to provide a platform for growth and opportunity for them to grow as well.
Yeah, I want to ask you, we're going to take a break here in about 30 seconds. I want to ask you where you get your people from when you come back. But I know my first year of public accounting, I'm a little bit older than you. I literally couldn't have a discussion with a client.
Right.
Because they didn't teach me that in accounting school at University of San Diego. It was all about how to do the work.
Right.
But there was nothing about how to actually have relationships. So it's really interesting. But we're going to take a quick break. It's Richard Busio with Jason Kruger from Signature Analytics here on AM 1170 KCBQ, The Answer. It's your business. We're going to be right back. Sit tight.
AM 1170, The Answer. KCBQ, San Diego.
Hi, James Carmody here, host of Rise Up Radio, empowering San Diego servant leaders in owning the claim that San Diego is America's finest city. Help us share the good news every Saturday at 2 p.m. for Rise Up Radio on AM 1170, The Answer.
AM 1170, The Answer. KCBQ, San Diego.
Well, Chief, would you believe we're back with It's Your Business? Richard Busio with our special guest, Jason Kruger, who heads up Signature Analytics, a great CFO service company. And I tell people, if you listen to this show, you're going to get smart. And of course, those of you who are a little bit younger than me probably don't even know what I'm talking about. That was a great comedy back in the 1960s with Don Adams, Edward Platt as the chief. One of the funniest, I think. Did you ever see Get Smart, Jason? I know it was a little bit before your time.
No, I have not seen it.
You'd enjoy it. It's really, really funny. Really, really funny. Out of the 60s. Barbara Felton. As yep. Agent 86.
A little created by Mel Brooks.
That's right. Created by Mel Brooks. You are correct. Thanks, Todd. Yep. Yeah, Mel Brooks.
A little bit before my time, but I got to check it out.
You got to check out Get Smart. But one of the funniest things I've ever seen. So we were talking about hiring people. I know the traditional, and I apologize to all the accountants out there, but the traditional view of a CPA or an accountant is they have a green eye shade on and they're sitting behind a desk cranking numbers and they're basically incapable of having a conversation. But whereas those kinds of technically competent people might be necessary in terms of a backroom application of getting work done, that's not really the best fit for you guys, right?
No, not at all. And that's why the best places to work is so important for us. We have to create a culture where we are drawing in the top talent. I feel that I'll compare our talent and our people to anybody in the marketplace.
Yeah, and I can attest that knowing a number of your team member.
Right. And so in addition to being technically strong from an accounting and GAAP perspective, we do have to, as I mentioned before, we have to be able to communicate. We have got to be proactive with our clients. The focus should be on adding value. So the first question is, how are we adding value to our clients? It's not, did we do the bank recs? The bank recs should be a given. We should ensure quality processes and procedures to ensure confidence and timeliness in the numbers. Mm-hmm. And then in addition to that, develop the appropriate financial reporting structure. But we need to be proactive in how we look at our clients' business so that we can ask the right questions, get out of the weeds, and really understand the business from a macro level and the direction that the business ownership wants to go so that we can help provide them with the right metrics and financial information to continue to meet their goals and objectives.
Yeah, you mentioned GAAP for our listeners who aren't accountants. GAAP means generally accepted accounting principle. And I spoke recently to a group of accounting soon-to-be graduates at University of San Diego who were all sort of under the misimpression that if they're really, really good technically, that that might be enough to get a really good job in the accounting world and succeed. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I said, that's mandatory, but it's only the baseline, basically, to get you hired big four firm as an analyst somewhere
right.
at a bank wherever. You have to be good at what you do technically. I said, but I said, beyond that, the question becomes, what value can you bring to the table that goes beyond merely being good technically? Because that's really the thing that only gets you in the door,
right.
in my humble opinion.
Right.
And I don't mean to diminish the importance of that, but it isn't enough. So when you talk about adding value, obviously, you know, for example, improving internal controls, great example of adding value. But one area that I love to talk about in terms of adding value to clients or customers, whatever you prefer to call them, is the thing I call relationships.
Right. Yeah. It's, you know, to jump on your last comment, technical ability is obviously important. We have to have a strong foundation. The ability to communicate and learn how to think outside the box, that starts to progress one's career mm-hmm. as an accountant to more of a business advisor and truthfully towards a CFO. A CFO should not be focused on the accounting per se and looking backwards. We want to be looking forward.
Yeah, I talk about the past and the
right,
future.
Absolutely.
Right.
So we want to be looking forward in the business. And so when we talk about developing key performance indicators or metrics, that really is based on the goals and objectives, again, of the client or the management, sitting down with them and asking them questions, understanding what they're trying to accomplish, and then developing metrics that we can track over time that help them measure historical events, but also help them make decisions as they move forward.
That would be called predictive, for example.
Absolutely.
Right.
Right.
Because, for example, I'll give you a really common example, but one of my favorites, I hear this all the time. Gee, my business is growing so fast. How come I have no cash?
Right. Right. Well, there's two answers to that. One, right. Or they say, hey, my books show that I have a lot of income, but right. I have no cash. Right.
Right. Exactly.
Two answers. One, the books aren't right.
Yeah. That could be.
Because maybe, you know, they aren't accounting for them the right way. But the other, there's, you know, in many cases, they are overextended or they're not collecting on their AR or they're having to pay for inventory before, you know, before they're actually receiving payment on the mm-hmm. The sale of
yeah,
their
they're
product.
Paying on 30 days,
right,
but their clients
exactly.
are paying on 90.
So cash management is critical with small and mid-sized businesses. And that's one step that we put in almost right immediately with most of our clients is let's make sure we understand what your cash flows look like, not just today and tomorrow, but next week, next month, and then moving forward at a minimum for the next quarter. But we'd like to also have a sense as to what it looks like through the end of the year so that we can, again, make decisions or the client can make decisions on financing opportunities, investing in product, investing in machinery,
right. hiring new people,
hiring,
whatever
exactly.
the case might be.
Exactly.
Yeah, it needs to be predictive.
Right.
But I also say relationships, and I've used you guys for this before. It's like, who do you know who? So, for example, you not only serve your clients, but you also have great relationships with, shall we say, ancillary service providers in the financial mm-hmm. world that support the same businesses that you do. That might be bankers, it might be providers of other forms of capital, it might be factoring companies,
right.
correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I think above everything, we look at ourselves as a business advisor to our client if we're doing things the right way. And we're in a unique position because we see and work directly with our clients so frequently. We're there in their offices consistently throughout the month. We're meeting with them at a high level for a financial monthly financial review, at least monthly, as I mentioned. And whereas opposed to a tax advisor may talk to or discuss with their clients quarterly at most in some cases.
I was going to say, that's optimistic.
Right, at most. I may meet with your banker once or twice a year. They don't necessarily have their finger on what's happening as much as we do. So it gives us the opportunity to ask the right questions, make sure that their tax preparers are being proactive, working with them on tax planning strategies, make sure that they are communicating appropriately with their bank or their investors or their financing opportunities. so that they ensure that they're in a position to be successful moving forward. Risk assessment is important, asking the right questions around to ensure they have the right insurance policies in place that are in alignment with their business goals. So we can make recommendations to all of those other providers based on other providers that we feel are going to be proactive in the marketplace, mm-hmm. based on just our understanding and the fact that we're there and we consider ourselves, you know, a business advisor to our client.
Yeah, and I'm curious, what's a typical day for you? Because you're a CPA, so if you just walked up to somebody, say, at a business networking meeting and said, hey, I'm Jason Kruger, I'm a CPA, they would have a certain assumption about how you spend your days, which is totally inaccurate.
Right. Well, first they would think we're doing tax work.
Yeah, first they would think that, which you don't. But what's a typical day for you?
For me personally or for our people?
I
mean,
for you personally, and then I want to ask mm-hmm. about your people.
Yeah, so my title is president and founder. We did bring on a CEO about 18 months ago. He's been critical in growth and in driving initiatives to continue the scalability and growth that we've had. My typical day, I'm still involved in business development. I'm driving and supporting our, we have five or six other individuals that drive business within our company as well across the three markets. So I'm working very closely with them to ensure that they are successful. So I've turned in a lot of ways from an accountant to a sales guy, mm-hmm. which you know is a little bit unique, I guess. And well, it's a
I'm the same
TBD.
Way though.
Yeah, TBD. We'll see how it ends up. Right, but I'm very involved in that. We're also continuing to drive initiatives to we're a continuous improvement company. So we're always looking at ways to improve and continue to improve our mm-hmm. communications with our clients and how we fulfill and service our clients. It's a very big initiative this year to continue to finalize what we're calling our fulfillment or client service playbook, mm-hmm. Which is an ongoing, ever-evolving process to ensure that we have consistency in how we service our clients and that we don't lose the quality as we continue to grow. Because mm-hmm. It's easier to manage a company when you have 3 to 5 clients
exactly.
and a couple people.
Right.
But when you have 175 clients like we do across three markets, we have to ensure the quality of the service
for
every
one
of those
standardization,
clients. Absolutely.
Institutionalization.
Absolutely.
So a typical day for one of your team members?
One of our team members is working on probably 5 to 7 clients.
Okay.
So ensuring that they're allocating their time
appropriately.
So
they can gain a true understanding.
Absolutely. Yeah. So ensuring they're allocating their time appropriately, developing expectations with the client. And then depending on the level, we're working either from at the lower level mm-hmm. staff accounting work to support the day-to-day transactions of our clients, from invoicing to payment of bills to the monthly close process to ensure that the books are being closed. And then at the highest level, the CFOs are really the ones driving value. They're working with the client to, again, understand their goals and objectives, develop and drive a monthly reporting structure, and then sitting down with them and walking through. And not just walking through and reading back the report, because
right.
there's no value in that, right?
Right.
So it's coming to them with consideration points, and there's really a roadmap that our CFOs have to be successful in how they evaluate business and create key initiatives mm-hmm. that they are tackling with our clients.
Yeah, I mean, a simple example for me, you might hear, because I've experienced this as a CPA, you might have a client come to you and say, hey, I've picked up a new contract, it's $1 million of revenue, and let's say mm-hmm. they're doing $5 million, so it's a huge increase. Well, that can either make the business even more successful or it can kill the business.
Right.
People go, wait a minute, you get a 20% increase in business and it can kill me?
Right. Right. Well, yeah, there's a couple of reasons, right?
Yeah.
One could be that the margins on that new business are not appropriate for their current business.
Right.
One could be the terms, so cash flow piece.
Yeah.
And others, there could be other legality
sure.
reasons that would make it not successful.
Right.
As
but
well.
you've got to sit down.
It has to be evaluated. Yeah.
You've
got
to evaluate that looking forward.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. What does it mean to the business, and is this actually truly a good decision?
Yeah, it's and a lot of folks don't think about
that. In a lot of ways, I mean, I guess it depends on how you value your business mm-hmm. And or how the outside market would value your business. But would you rather be a $100 million company, with a bottom line of $5 million a year?
Right.
Or would you rather be a $20 million company with a bottom line of $5 million a year?
Right.
I'd probably rather be the $20
million. I agree.
It's a lot easier to manage a $20 million than $100 million.
Hey, we've got to take a quick break. We're coming up on our 30-minute break, and then I'm going to announce my special news when we come back. Richard Musio, It's Your Business with Jason Kruger from Signature Analytics. Sit tight, and then the big news gets broken.
AM 1170, The Answer. KCBQ, San Diego.
Hi, this is Paula Shaw, host of Change It Up, connecting empowered women and men to create a new kind of conversation that generates mutual respect and cooperation. Tune in Saturday and Sunday at 7 p.m. for Change It Up, right here at AM 1170, The Answer.
AM 1170, The Answer. KCBQ, San Diego.
What, is it somebody's birthday? Jason, whose birthday is it?
I think it might be yours.
It is my birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday.
Thanks. It's Sunday, June 3rd. I was born a long, long time ago. Yeah. I'm not going to say how long ago.
You're talking about 60s movies. So.
I know, 60s movies. Yeah. Talking about, you know, Get Smart on TV. We used to watch Get Smart on black and white.
Okay.
You know why? Because there was no other choice.
Right, right.
And it was one of the three TV stations we could tune into. So there weren't a lot of other choices anyway, but they were all black and white. But yeah, today's my birthday, so everybody wish me a happy birthday. And everybody's like, that's what we were waiting for? That was it, Richard?
Tuned in for 30 minutes waiting for that.
Well, you know, I mean, I don't want to announce that right at the start. So anyway, when the show's over, go out, buy me a gift, get me a card. I like cash. Anyway, happy birthday to me. But we taped this show, so I didn't have to drag myself all the way down to the studio on my birthday. All right, thanks. Anyway, so Jason, I want to talk about some things going on in the marketplace. But before that, when I was speaking to this group of accounting students at USD, I also told them one other thing that I think is critical. I said, you have to, and you can tell me your impressions of this. I said, you have to learn how to communicate with business owners, clients, end users, whatever you wish to call them, in a way they can understand. I said, accountants and attorneys are just as bad, and wealth advisors do the same thing. We all have like this lingo or jargon that we get used to, and we go out and we start talking about it, and people's eyes glaze over because they have no idea what we're saying.
Right. Oh, yeah, it's critical. We have continuous training over this exact topic. And in a lot of ways, we actually explain, and what excites our clients in some cases, and it's kind of funny, is that we explain that we are an interpreter between them and their other advisors. So if the client or if the business owner goes to a meeting with their tax advisor, they may, you know, the tax advisor may be talking in a different language that they may not understand.
But he may go, you need to do adopt LIFO.
Right, right.
And they're like, what?
Yeah, what? What are you talking about? So what we can do is that's why it's so critical that we're there. We act as an interpreter to help the client digest the information and make a decision off of that. But that piece is critical. And the other piece is just general communications with business owners. It's critical to communicate when you send a communication verbally or written to understand how the business owner is going to interpret that communication because they may interpret it differently than how you believe they will interpret it. The other thing is when it comes to value, I may tell you I'm giving you all the value in the world for my service, but if the client or the business owner does not see or interpret that value, there's no point in performing it, or we're not communicating it in the right way. They're not going to want to pay for it regardless of how much value I think I gave them. It's how they perceive the value, which is most important.
Yeah, no question. The value is in the customer's eyes. I told these accounting students that the ability to write succinctly and clearly and to express what you mean in ways that is non-technical is probably the most important skill you can learn as an accountant. And of course, their eyebrows got raised because they're thinking their most important skill is that they can prepare books and records or prepare an income tax return. They're like, write something clearly. What does that have to do with accounting?
Right. Well, I think that's where actually financial statement audit comes so important.
Right.
You spend 10 years drafting and writing tick marks, you know?
Right.
So you
and drafting footnotes to financial statements.
And yeah, so you start to get the lingo within the accounting world and how things should be communicated. But then there's another, there's a bridge or a gap that has to be addressed between the accounting team and the business owner or executive team. And the ones that can communicate effectively, become a trusted advisor to the business owner, are going to be the most successful and will continue to grow.
Yeah, there's no question. So a couple of topics that fascinate me. One is, I speak about it in general terms, real-time accounting. When I started in the business, again, I'm not going to say how old I was, but I started in the business in 1980. We carried around a lot of colored paper and pencils of different colors.
Yep.
We didn't really have any computers in the office. To do financial statements, we would prepare like the standardized journal entry worksheets, and then we'd send them to a processing center that was in a building that was about as big as a city square block. And all this processing center did was crank out financial statements for accountants.
Wow.
But the point is we didn't really have access to data or information or what I call knowledge the way we do now. Now, you know, you talk about KPIs, key performance indicators. I think we've mentioned the term dashboards.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mentioned real-time accounting where things are literally being accounted for as they happen.
Right.
Which makes it easy, because our goal in the old days was to, if we could get a financial statement done for a company by its month end 15 days later, that was really timely.
Right.
And you ask the question, well, of what use could that thing possibly be now?
Right.
3 weeks after the period ended.
Right. Well, it's important to close the books officially after the month ends.
Of course.
But during the month, there's a number of things that can be done throughout the month to ensure that management has the right information at their fingertips. Mm-hmm. What I recommend against is having management actually physically go into the accounting software and trying to pull the information out themselves.
Right.
Because there are a number of things in process that's not their skill set. So ensuring that there is the appropriate communications between the accounting and financial team and the owner to ensure that they're getting the right information when they need it throughout the month is critical. But that can be a number of things. It could be real-time cash flow information.
Yeah, I was going to say, on a dashboard that shows key performance indicators, what are some of the most common examples of things that a business owner wants to be able to turn the computer on and see in real time?
Yeah. Well, cash flow is critical. Mm-hmm. So that also includes accounts receivable management, AP management, real-time revenue numbers are also critical. So depending on what their goals are, where are they throughout the month from a revenue perspective? Inventory levels, critical to understand your inventory levels at all times. Ensure that you have appropriate levels to maximize, again, cash flow. You don't want your inventory sitting on the shelves too much. But it's really customized for each business. But it is critical to know and understand some of these figures throughout the month.
Yeah, and it's really neat, some of the applications that are out in the marketplace now. Everybody's used to QuickBooks, but there's applications now like Xero. There are dashboards for accountants like Carbon HQ, Spotlight Reporting, it goes on and on and on, the things that are out there. I tell people I wish I had been born like 20 years later, so I didn't have to go through the first 20 years of being, not having no access to IT.
Right. And it's come a long way, but I still think it's in its infancy for small and mid-sized businesses. I would say that they are behind the curve in general as far as sophistication relating to larger businesses. Being able to sort through what's most effective for these businesses is critical.
Yeah, I mean, I think they are. I think a lot of small businesses, they still have very old-fashioned advisors, which is part of the challenge. I don't mean to put the knock on anybody, but to the extent that the business is a little bit old-fashioned and the advisors have been around for 40 years and they're a little bit old-fashioned, you don't really get access to the new information or knowledge about what some of the opportunities or choices might be.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the cost of technology has come down dramatically.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, technology companies are moving towards the subscription model, which reduces the overall one-time cost, spreads it out over time. It's better for the technology company. It adds value from a valuation perspective to them. And it's more—it's easier to swallow for the business owners as well.
Yeah, there's no question. And there may be too many technology choices out there now for small and medium-sized business owners. That's why they need an expert to help them sift through it to see what might be appropriate.
Right.
Because there's no way they have time or knowledge to do it on their own, in my opinion.
Right. And we do a lot of that. We work with our clients and companies to transition them from one platform to another to ensure that that's a successful transition or an implementation, depending on what their needs are. If QuickBooks or Xero is appropriate, that's great. If a company is elevated beyond that, there are other platforms that companies can work with. The great thing now is most of those platforms are web-based, mm-hmm. so the updates occur automatically. You don't have to do your annual upgrade or update, which costs you, cost you another arm and a leg,
right?
Or in a lot of cases, which companies don't do, right? So they're running off of the 2004 version right. of XYZ,
right?
Now the upgrades happen automatically and can be much more customizable through the online platforms.
Yeah, you've got to be in the cloud today, don't you agree?
Oh, absolutely,
you have to be.
Yeah, that's why most companies don't even need a server anymore, because all of their backup, all of their information and backups can all be done on the cloud, mm-hmm. like we do, actually.
Yeah, same with me. Hey, you've got some really interesting niche markets you've worked in. I know Craft Brew, which is a mm-hmm. big business here in San Diego, is one of them. Can you tell us about some of your favorite markets here in San Diego?
Yeah, so we do work with Craft Brew. It certainly is an interesting market. I think it's a little bit more challenging from a financial perspective than the outside mm-hmm. individual may notice or see. I think we've all seen in the news recently the Green Flash's challenges and mm-hmm. overextending themselves. I think that there's a number of other breweries that have gotten to the point where they're saying, okay, now what's my next step? What do I do? So we do work with about four or five breweries right now to support them and help them understand their cash flows, their metrics, so that they can continue to grow. We have a number of, we really are agnostic when it comes to different types of industries. We have a number of clients in the manufacturing industry, professional service, technology, software as a service. We have a number of life science companies mm-hmm. and biotech companies in San Diego because of that niche in yep. San Diego.
Huge here in San Diego.
Yep. So we really have, you name it, and we're pretty much working with it.
But I should point out to our listeners, if you're ever lucky enough to get invited to an event or an open house at Jason's office, you want to go because he's got a handful of craft brew clients.
Right. And they supply the beer. Right. So one of our clients, Latitude 33, supplied the beer at our last event. It was great.
So even if you hate accounting, that's okay. Yep. Just go anyway, because it'll be well worth your time.
And they have a great blood orange IPA.
They do. Okay. Yeah, that's funny. But yeah, I mean, San Diego's somewhat of a unique market, as a business place because of our life sciences, high tech, biotech.
Right.
It's a neat place to be, actually. A lot of creative people, a lot of creative business owners running around on the loose, but that might even be more challenging to work with than some of your old-fashioned business owners, because a lot of these creative folks, their heads are just so far ahead of everybody else in terms of great ideas and so on.
Right.
That trying to get them to get financial statements done and think about cash flow could be a
right.
real challenge.
Well, a lot of the work that we do is on educating the client.
Exactly.
Many business owners have a fantastic skill set. They've been very successful. They've developed a great product. They can sell it very well, but they tend to grow. They can potentially grow themselves out of business. Or they end up capping themselves because they don't have that financial sophistication to scale and take their business to the next level. They haven't built that infrastructure.
Absolutely. Here, we're going to take our last break of the day and then come back for the last quarter of It Your Business. Richard Muse here with our special guest, Jason Kruger from Signature Analytics. We will be right back, I promise.
AM 1170, The Answer. KCBQ, San Diego.
No one likes traffic. All you want to do is get home and relax. And if you're me, eat a burger. You know what else no one likes? Fake news. It's time for a reality check. And from someone who tells it like it is. And that's me, Andrea Kay. That's why they call me Dynamite in a Dress. Join me Monday through Friday, 6 to 7 p.m. I'll be taking your calls, talking about everything from politics to entertainment and current events from San Diego to D.C. So let me, Andrea Kay, share the ride home with you. The Andrea Kay Show, live Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. on AM 1170, The Answer.
AM 1170, The Answer. KCBQ, San Diego.
This is Green Acres. I love this TV show too, Jason. But you probably didn't see this one either, because
I did not, no.
If you didn't see Get Smart, you never saw Green Acres
no,
either.
No.
It's a great show about a socialite from New York City who married a farmer. And they moved out to the country, and it was hilarious. And they had a talking pig. And I loved it. But speaking about Green Acres, which sort of suggests that everything is going to be rosy and the future's bright, business is going to be great. I know we've had Tax Reform Act of 2018 here about 5 months ago. I know you're not a tax guy, but certainly business owners, they spend a lot of time thinking about, worrying about, fretting about, looking for opportunities with income taxes.
Yep.
What are your thoughts and impressions about the Tax Reform Act of 2018, and has it made business owners more optimistic, less optimistic, or just more confused?
Right. Well, that's when I have them go talk to you, right?
Yeah, exactly. So,
but
you,
I think
you get the feel from these folks.
Yeah, I think in general they're more optimistic. I think the economy is great right now, which helps. I think there certainly is opportunity. I think it's created a lot of business for CPA tax advisors. Mm-hmm. But I think it also, you know, the planning, this creates a necessity in the planning. It's, you know, if a business owner has not spoken to their tax advisor about the impact of this now, they need to do so. Because there's certainly
now,
differences.
Not in December.
Right. Or even next February. Right.
Right. Exactly.
Because there are opportunities, especially with flow through companies, which ones may be impacted versus which ones aren't. I wasn't overly excited about how they specifically identified accountants and attorneys as not, you know, we don't
qualify for anything, Jason.
Right, but somehow, you know, engineers and architects do. So
but
I'll say, I don't know.
You guys aren't really an accounting company in the traditional sense. You're consulting firm.
Right, we're professional services.
Yeah.
Although I'm pretty sure that we do not qualify discounted tax rates, right?
Yeah. But so what we're alluding to here, so the Tax Reform Act, it put in this 20% income exclusion for qualified businesses. I'm not going to go into what a qualified business is because we'll be here until my next birthday going over those regulations. But a 20% income reduction. So just in general, if you're just a little sole proprietor making $200,000 a year, well, now you're going to pay tax on 160 grand, not 200, which is really cool. But you go, well, that's neat. So I'll just be a sole proprietor or maybe be an S-corp. But then to make the decision-making even harder, the corporate tax rate, the tax rate that applies to what we call regular or C, like the letter C, subchapter C corporations, has been dropped from 35% down to 21%. Now, historically, and I was going to ask you, Jason, do you see a lot of businesses, before I explain this, do you see a lot of businesses operating a C corporation?
We do. It's considerably less. I'd probably say in the small mid-market community, 90% are S-corps and
S-corps
LLCs.
S-corps and LLCs, yeah.
Right.
That's what I see, too.
Yep. But you know, it's a consideration point, right?
Right.
It needs to be evaluated with the changes in the tax law. You know, at what point does it make sense?
Right. People have been afraid of C-corps because of what we call the potential for double tax. So the corporation pays tax on its income when it earns it. And then at some date in the future, they pay dividends out to its owners who then pay tax again. So there was always this specter of double tax. And certainly if the C-corp rate was 35%, that's quite an ugly specter to pay tax again.
Right.
I would comment that I think C-corps become mandatory in certain situations depending on your exit strategy. So if, for example, you're planning to go public, or if you're planning to grow to a point that's very large where you have, say, a strategic buyer or a strategic competitor as a potential buyer, I think C-corps might make more sense.
Right. Yeah, and one thing I did want to mention is last year, there's a number of, and you know a lot more about this than I do, but just meeting with your tax advisor is critical. Last year, we actually were applied and accepted for the California Competes credit, which basically is for companies that are looking to grow over a five-year period.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on how much growth and how many employees you will be hiring over that period, there's a calculation that determines how much of a potential tax credit you get for state of California taxes. As a flow-through entity, as we are, that flows through directly to the ownership's pocket, per se.
I guess. Onto their Form 1040, so to speak.
Exactly.
Yep.
There's a large benefit. Now, it has to be calculated appropriately because, and you actually have to meet those requirements of growth. You can't take the credit and not hire anybody.
Right.
You'll have to give that back. But there are opportunities that sometimes businesses aren't aware of, like that, like R&D tax credits, some low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, credits can be a very complicated area unless you happen to be a CPA who specializes in it. There's always new ones coming on board, new ones that have expired. I mean, old ones that are expiring. And it's very true here in California, particularly, that there's all kinds of really neat programs. And again, that's why people need to sit down, business owners need to sit down with their CPAs to do tax planning, not in December, assuming they have a December year end, but no later than halfway through the year, in my humble opinion.
Right.
Because it takes time to implement strategies.
Right. Absolutely.
And tax planning simply can't be done with 2 or 3 weeks to go in the year. That's a joke.
Right.
So, Jason, let's assume that I'm an accounting student coming out of college, graduate, you know, my major's in accounting. Mm-hmm. Do you think starting out with a Big Four, if I have that opportunity, is still the way to go?
I think it's a great opportunity. I think what it does is it sets the foundation. It builds your foundation from a technical perspective. If I see somebody that has a Big Four background, mm-hmm. that's been there for more than, let's say, 3 years, mm-hmm. they've been there 1 year, you know, it doesn't mean a lot to me.
Yeah, they do a lot of payroll tax returns.
Right, exactly. But if they've been there for a number of years, I think it's a very strong foundation from a technical perspective, but it also gives you it also builds your communication skills because you are communicating with clients, you're communicating with business owners, you're having to multitask between different business owners mm-hmm. and clients. So it's a critical component. That's one thing that we sell very heavily as well is that background. So we give you, working with us gives you a ability to build a strong financial background. You get exposure to different industries, but you also learn how to be proactive and what it means to be to think outside the box, look forward with a client as well. And that's a lot of what we use to pull and to drive the highest level of performers to our company.
Yeah, I love how you always mention look forward, because I always tell accountants this, especially young ones who are looking for some counsel. I say that business owners never look backwards except to maybe help them frame what they're looking at going forwards. So they spend 90% of their time looking into the future, maybe 9% of the time on what's right in front of them. Mm-hmm. And the other 1%, maybe they're looking backwards for some reason. But they just don't look backwards. They look forwards. And so I tell accountants, if you're looking backwards and all of your clients are looking forwards, you're philosophically never going to fit. You're not going to be successful in this business.
Right.
Well, and that really opens their eyes when I put it that way.
Absolutely. And the reason that you would look backwards as a business owner is to understand how you can make things better mm-hmm. moving forward, right?
Right.
So that's the only reason you really want to look backwards. If you see, hey, you know, is there opportunity to drive more margin out of this product or out of this service? Or are we hitting the goals that we've established? If we are, you know, if we aren't, why not? If we are, why are we? And can we do better? And so it really should define the decisions you make as you look forward mm-hmm. in the business.
Yeah, I always had this joke about the accountant who lost a client, and he lost the client because the economy went, you know, in a downward spiral like 2008. So the joke goes, well, my client made $200,000 2 years ago, but only $100,000 last year. He was break even last year, and now he's out of business. And so you're only sitting there looking backwards. And my question would always be, well, why weren't you helping him to predict what might happen if there was an economic downturn? He lost his best client, whatever the case might be. So that they might be able to weather the storm. But then nobody ever looked forward. Mm-hmm. They only look backward. And then you get to a point where there's no forward to look forward to in some cases.
Right. Absolutely.
And it's really, really, really scary when you think about it that way.
Right.
So you've got some great team members. Do you get some new prospects coming in just because some of the great folks that work with you say, hey, I know this young lady or I know this guy, and they're not that happy with the Big Four or they've done their time, but they're looking for something more interesting?
Yep. Yeah, we definitely promote recruiting from within. Nothing's better than a personal referral. Mm-hmm. We do have a full-time recruiter that, you know, her full-time job is to find and identify the top talent. And to our point that we've been discussing before, your technical background is critical, but our culture and fitting within our culture is absolutely critical as well. And the ability to communicate and have all of the other attributes that we discussed. But individuals with a background in public accounting is very desirable for us. But we also have individuals that have a combined background in public accounting and in industry mm-hmm. With certain industry criteria that they fit that work with our company as well.
Yeah, and I was reading one of these newsletters that was predicting the future of different professions, and it said one of the worst professions to go into is going to be accounting because 10, 15 years from now, accountants will be almost obsolete. But the article didn't do a really good job of explaining what it meant. It meant mm-hmm. that the historical functions of accountants, like preparing income tax returns, which technology can do most of now, or preparing basic or rather routine financial statements, all automation is going to be rendered, shall we say, obsolete. but certainly the forward-looking application of being an accountant, or more precisely, a business advisor, I don't think will ever be rendered obsolete, and in my humble opinion, only gets more and more important the faster the economy moves, the more, shall we say, international the economy becomes.
Right, absolutely. And that's why we look at ourselves, as I've mentioned before, as a business advisor. It's actually one of our core values, and that is our value to our clients. We cannot go into a relationship looking at ourselves as a commodity of, we'll just do your bookkeeping. Mm-hmm. Yes, your accounting will be accurate, and you'll have confidence in that. But the value that we bring to the table is much more beyond that. And that's what we have to communicate to our clients. And then that's what we have to deliver on.
Exactly. So Jason, phone numbers, websites, how do people find you?
Yeah, you can call me direct, 858-228-5643. Our website is very user-friendly. It's signatureanalytics.com. And if you have any questions or concerns about anything going on in your business, I'm happy to discuss. And if it doesn't even relate to us, I'm happy to refer you to somebody that may be able to help you out.
Yeah, because a lot of people are going to people out. Hey, we are out of time. Jason Kruger, Signature Analytics, really, really appreciate you coming all the way down here to spend my birthday with me.
Yeah, happy birthday again.
Anyway, happy birthday to me. Everybody, it's your business. We're going to be back next week. Have a great week here in sunny San Diego. Take care now.